Al Horford, two for two and a steal.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Game on lock for sure.
I've been somebody that's been sold on Boston despite what I've been seeing. I've got extreme trepidation now because I'm watching the Milwaukee Bucks be elite defensively. Offensively, you know what the Greek Freak brings to the table. And then on top of it all, they're hitting perimeter shots. They launch more threes than anybody in basketball. The one game that Boston beat them this year, Milwaukee outscored Boston by 40 points in the paint. But Boston won that one game against Milwaukee because they hit 24 three-pointers. Now when you look at Boston in this series, you're looking at Kyrie Irving shooting better than 40% from three-point range. Tatum better than 50% from three-point range. Jaylen Brown better than 40% from three-point range. All of this in the first round series against Indiana. You're looking at Boston and saying, okay, you're young, you've got some thoroughbreds, you've got a closer in Kyrie Irving. Are you going to hit perimeter shots to keep you in the contest so it could come down to the last 3 minutes of the game where it's the Greek Freak against Kyrie Irving? Who am I going to give the ball to take me to the promised land? If Boston could do that, they could win the series. Here's the problem. It's the only way they can win the series, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do.
Indeed it is. Only one man can sound like that. That's ESPN Stephen A. Smith with his thoughts on the upcoming second-round series between the Celtics and Milwaukee Bucks. Tips off tomorrow at 1. Of course, you can catch it here on 98.5 Sports Hub. Randy and Max will have the call. Sports Hub Celtic Show, 98.5 Sports Hub. Jim Murray and Chris Gasper, Tim McCone alongside as well, and you at 617-779-0985. As I alluded to before the headlines with McCone, I had an epiphany about this series just this morning. Someone's going to be exposed as a fraud. And I can't figure out who. And I didn't make my pick on this series yet on Felgren Maz, and neither did Maz, because I really want to see how game one looks. But here's why I mean that one of these teams are going to be exposed as a fraud, Chris, because the things you keep hearing about the Celtics after their sweep of the Indiana Pacers, which feels like was a month ago, they're back. This is the Celtics team that we anticipated we were going to see before the season started. They finally clicked. Gordon Hayward's healthy. They're back. Everything's fine. Is it? Do we know that? And then with the Bucks, who have this fantastic home record, they're a different team under Mike Budenholzer. Mike Budenholzer is even one-upped Brad Stevens before when he was with the head coach of the Atlanta Hawks. But then, you know, this is what really hit me when it came to the Bucks. Jim, you dummy, you covered those Hawks teams. You worked in Atlanta. You covered Mike Budenholzer. You covered the team that went 17-0, the first team in NBA history, in the month of January of 2015. It's never happened before. This team, wow, the Hawks have finally figured out they're actually going to get over the LeBron hump. No, time and time again, it's failure after failure for those Mike Budenholzer teams. So are they going to be the fraud? One of these teams is going to be exposed as a fraud in this series because the Bucks, as good as Giannis has been this year, and he's the deserving MVP, they got some holes there. I don't know if I really buy how good they are defensively, how good they are at shooting the three, especially without Malcolm Brogdon. So one of these teams is getting exposed in this series.
I think that's a great take, to be honest with you. You're right, because I think one of these teams is going to be enormously disappointed to be out in the second round. And when I look at this series, you know, for me, I think the key for the Celtics, we can talk a lot about Kyrie, and everybody knows Kyrie is going to have to play well. That's obvious. The key for me is Al Horford, because traditionally he's played extremely well against the Bucks. He was fantastic against them in that series. Last season, he was really good, 18.1 points per game, 8.7 rebounds, shot 58.8% from the floor, 43.8 from three. And just covering that series as I did, I thought he was the Celtics' most consistent player, their best player the whole series. Remember, a lot of those young guys who popped, Tatum, Rozier, Brown, they were inconsistent. They play great at home and not so great on the road. I mean, I got to go back and look it up, but I'm not sure Terry Rozier made a single three away from TD Garden that series last year. So Horford has always been a matchup problem for the Bucks. He was, you know, he played against him in two games this year. The shooting percentage was really low, but again, the numbers were great. He averaged 19.5 points a game, 11 boards, 6.5 assists. He is the key to me for this series. And this will be one of those things for the people that sort of the average Al folks. You know, if he goes out there and he's average Al, then they're going to lose. If he goes out there and he plays the way he's played in the past and Kyrie does what he's supposed to do, let's say Kyrie doesn't get exposed, Gordon Hayward doesn't get exposed, then the Celtics will win the series.
And I just don't know who else really scares me outside of Middleton on that team as far as their secondary players. Without Brogdon, who I think they are going to miss, and you know they say he could be back for Game 3, but what's he going to be with a plantar fascia issue that's kept him out this long? Miritich? Like, eh. Lopez, Ilyasova, like, I don't know. Like, I look at this team, and I know that they have been coached better. They have these knockdown shooters like that, but I don't know. Can they be consistent? It's a lot different. As much as I looked at the first-round series for the Celtics against the Pacers as kind of a fake series, it was the same thing for the Bucks in Detroit with a hobbled Blake Griffin. Like, that was just a tune-up to me, too. So this is really their first test, and someone's going to get exposed because this Celtics season, time and time again, I kept buying in and buying in like most Celtics fans did. And I'm not going to be like, you know, everything's fine, everything's awesome now because of the way that they wrapped up the season and they had wins against Miami and the Pacers and then this series. I'm sorry, I'm not doing it yet because time and time again, I got duped. Anytime they got pushed, anytime there was a little bit of adversity, all the chirping began again. All the infighting started again. And I don't think it'll take much to push, especially if Kyrie Irving still has one foot out the door and he's eyeing to go to the New York Knicks, which I still think is in play.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's been the rumor, obviously. I still think Kyrie might have an idea of what he wants to do. I certainly don't know what is in Kyrie Irving's mind. Whatever he wants to do now might not necessarily be what he does July 2nd. I still think it's open. You know, it's sort of like this is like a court case, and the Celtics have an opportunity here to present their final argument for why he should stay. And I think that's what the playoffs represent to some degree for the Boston Celtics. When I look at this series and what you're just saying, so the flip side of what I said about Horford being huge for Boston, for Milwaukee, I think it's Eric Bledsoe. So I hear everything you're saying. Malcolm Brogdon is a Celtic killer. Let's see how long it takes him to come back in the series and what he's like when he comes back. But do you think Eric Bledsoe is going to be as bad as he was last year?
I don't know. I think, and I base a lot of this on, you know, Felger's talking about this because this is his team and he actually watches them and he says he's a hack. I thought he was god awful in that series last year.
He was terrible.
You know, like, so no, if that's what they're relying on, that's one of the reasons I give the edge to the Celtics. I think it's easy to get in that guy's head.
But here's my point, and I agree with what you're saying. Like, it is kind of scary to rely on Eric Bledsoe, but he was really bad. I mean, he got outplayed by Terry Rozier in that series last year, and it went 7. And I know Kyrie's back and Gordon Hayward's back. I just don't think Bledsoe's going to be that bad. And I think with the Bucks having home court, with the Bucks having a better coach, I mean, I know you've covered Budenholzer, and he is a good coach, but he's had some failures, no question about it. But you don't think he's better than, you know, who was it, Jim Boylan or whoever was the coach last year?
No, I think he's good. You're right. He's
so
good.
Upgrading coaching.
Yeah.
It should be an upgraded point guard because Bledsoe should be better. They have more shooters than they've had in the past. Giannis is better. They have home court this time. And as you said, the Celtics have crumbled at the first sign of adversity. See, that's what scares me. And you mentioned that is I thought the Pacers would push them more. You know, I said before that series started, it would go 6. And I was like, oh, they're the ideal opponent. You know, they can't really challenge them in terms of them threatening to beat the Celtics in the series. But, you know, it's going to be great. Brad's going to point to all the little things the Pacers do. Like the rest of us, I think the Celtics figured out after game one, these guys can't score. Oh, my God, they can't score.
Yeah.
They can't score. These guys can't score enough points to beat us. And they swept him, and it was easy. And that's what makes me fearful. It was too easy for the Celtics. What happens in this series when they get pushed?
How do they defend Giannis? Is there – because I
– Oh, Shemmy.
That's what I think.
John, yeah, Shemmy.
That's what I think. You know, because going back to the first time that they played back in whatever it was, October, November, I forget who it was out. It was either Brown or Hayward. Hayward might have been out at the time. So Ojale found himself in the rotation. I think he was the starting five that night. It was a Thursday night at the Garden. And he did a decent enough job. So I think, you know, you're going to see a fair amount of Ojale getting a decent amount of minutes in this series trying to defend him. Now, you're not going to be able to stop him anytime he gets in the paint. But I think that's their best option. But on the flip side of that is, you know, he can be a black hole when it comes to offense, too. So you take the good with the bad.
I feel like he's gotten better, though. You know, when he first came in the league, it's like he wouldn't even take the shots. And there were a lot of times this year I was kind of like, man, you know, I wish this guy would play more. And I feel like once Marcus Morris, you know, leaves this team in free agency and gets a big payday, that maybe Shemmy will play more. I have more confidence in Shemmy's offense than I did, you know, the last couple of years. I just think he hasn't really gotten the opportunity. Now, is he the Giannis stopper? Is he the Joe Dumars to Giannis's Michael Jordan? I think that's a little bit of hyperbole. You know, I understand why Brad likes him out there against Giannis. I think he can help. But I do think Brad tends to sort of oversell the impact that Ojale has covering Giannis Antetokounmpo. But you're going to see more of him in this series than you've seen in a while.
And I'm with you in that Horford is going to need to be big in this series. Same for Baines because the Bucks are fantastic defending in the paint. You know, you look at some of the advanced statistics. No one defends on the paint better than the Milwaukee Bucks.
But that's Budenholzer. He's always been like that. Right. That's his defensive philosophy, which is so weird in today's NBA. He will take away the paint and say, go ahead, I will give up some of those threes. Now, he's adjusted a little, and his teams have gotten better at defending the three. But overall, that's his philosophy. So now I'm going to go back to your boy, Kyrie Irving. What's it like when he gets in the lane there? Is he going to be able to finish? Because the Bucks are going to pack the paint. They're going to have guys like Antetokounmpo and Brooke Lopez waiting at the rim to challenge those shots.
And that's where frustration could build, and that's where he could get pissed and check out and say, hey, deuces in the air, I'm out, I'm going to New York anyway. A lot of fascinating little storylines in regard to this series. And could the Bucks be looking to get some revenge here too, considering how contested that first round series was last year? And I think if you flipped it and the Bucks actually had home court, they end up winning it because of how bad guys like Rozier were on the road in that series. So, game one tomorrow. Want to get your thoughts, 617-779-0985. And we'll also get some insight on this series courtesy of Chris Forsberg, the Celtics insider of NBC Sports Boston. He's going to join us next right here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show. This is Jaylen Brown, and home with the Boston Celtics basketball, 98.5 the Sports Hub.
Middleton was unbelievable last year against us in the playoffs. I mean, he really shot the ball well and made shots against great defense. And so Middleton obviously has our attention from what he did to us last year. And I think Bledsoe has really had a great year this year. So I think those three guys are obviously the keys to their team.
Celtics president of basketball ops, Danny Ainge, on with Toucher and Rich earlier this week. Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Getting ready for Celtics Bucks game one, tipping off tomorrow in old Milwaukee. Let's get some insight on this series from Celtics insider, who normally joins us around this time each and every week here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show, Chris Forsberg. He joins us here in the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good afternoon, Chris.
What up? What's going down?
Not too much. So this one feels like, and I know that Sean Grandy feels this, and I'm starting to believe the same thing. Like, whoever wins this series, I think, is coming out of the East and going to the finals. But at the very least, do you think, like I do, that this one's going to go at least six games? We're in for a knockdown, drag-out kind of a series.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot like last year where home court will matter, and can someone find a way to steal one of these on the road? I think the Celtics weren't really ready for it last year. They went up to Milwaukee. I don't think they realized how hard it is to play up there. And now they have this new arena and better coach and better players. And so it's definitely going to be difficult. And yet, listen, I'm fascinated to see how it plays out because I have no idea where these teams sort of stand after the first round. There was encouraging signs for both teams. And obviously the Bucks have done it longer, but it should be a fun series, and let's hope it lives up to the expectations.
Chris, what's the latest on Marcus Smart, and how will his impact be felt for the games he misses of this series?
Yeah, so the latest is we sit there with our little cell phone cameras and record every time he makes any sliver of a movement at practice, and we overreact to it, and Brad Stevens gets really mad and says, I don't have an update, and so... Listen, he's making progress. I don't think he expected to be running this early. He was doing sprint work yesterday. He's been putting up shots to get out to the three-point line yesterday. But, you know, not a lot of stuff with twisting and moving that would require him to use his oblique. And so I still think he's a ways away here. I think the Celtics are hopeful that maybe by the end of this series there's a chance you could get him back on the court. But it's ultimately going to come down to he's got to go into the old MRI machine, get a scan, and be told that tear has healed sufficiently enough to allow him back out there. Because I think if Marcus Smart had his druthers, he's like, you know, he'd probably try to get out there now, but you got to protect him from himself a little bit here. And so how does his impact the series? How does his loss impact the series? I think you don't have that intangible. Like, listen, Marcus Smart came back in game five of last year's series and dove on the floor and the first 20 seconds he was out there and changed the whole tenor of the series and the way he hustled and all the things that he does. And so that's what you miss. But on the other hand, Jaylen Brown has really stepped up. I thought he had a great series against Indiana. He gives you that a little bit more size on the defensive side. And you know, if he plays with intensity, he's still a plus defender. I think the Bucks. plugged in because of the way he can impact their offense and give them another scoring threat. So right now I think it washes itself out a little bit, but certainly you'd feel a lot more comfortable going into this series if you had Marcus Smart on your side.
Chris Forsberg covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. Chris, no team in the NBA defends the rim better than the Bucks and Giannis. That's pretty obvious. So does this mean the Celtics are going to really have to rely a little bit more on guys like Al Horford and like an Aaron Baines in this series?
Well, it'll be interesting because I do think initially they're going to go small. And like I get the idea of Baines and being a defensive tone setter and being able to protect the rim and maybe deter Giannis a little bit more, but I think ultimately if the Celtics are going to find a way to steal this series, they've got to figure out ways to score points because the Bucks are just too good. They're going to score. So how do the Celtics match that? And I think you go small, you try to take advantage of Brook Lopez out there, you take advantage of Budenholzer's system, which gives up the three-point shot. So it comes down to Al Horford, who hasn't shot the ball particularly well in these playoffs and really for much of the year. Can he be the guy last year with an above-average three-point shooter and make them pay? And can other guys step up and hit those shots? I think there'll be a role for Baines in this series, and certainly the Celtics can't just rely on the three-point shot overall. But it might just hinge on that and the chess match that comes down from it. Like, okay, if the Celtics start small and they take advantage of Lopez, does Budenholzer have to pull Lopez off the floor, and do they have to go small? And how did the Celtics? I don't know. It's going to be a fascinating little chess match between the coaches, and it might ultimately dictate it. But I think you'll see a lot more Gordon Hayward, a lot more Marcus Morris, Semi Ojeleye, than maybe necessarily Baines, unless they put a premium on defending that rim and really ramping up that.
Chris, how much of a concern is it that, you know, the three games this year the Celtics played against the Bucks, Kyrie Irving shot 38.8% from the field and had some difficulties at times finishing around the rim with Brook Lopez there, with Giannis there?
Yeah, it's certainly a concern. Like, I mean, that's part of what makes Kyrie great. I think what you'll see is they're going to try to set screens further away from the basket, give them some room to work with. They weren't always great about that. And part of that was Al wasn't there for a couple of those games. So, you know, he didn't have his screens to sort of could free him up and his passing to get Kyrie the ball in better spots. But, you know, it's hard for me to worry about playoff Kyrie. I just kind of feel like these are the stages he steps up on. And, you know, heck, I think back to the regular season last year when they played at the old Mecca on the old floor there, UW Panther Arena with the Mecca floor. You know, Kyrie was just like on another level because it was a national TV game. He was fired up for it. And, you know, the playoffs are very similar. He knows when that spotlight's on. He didn't see it throughout the first round, but what I thought you did see was that he really stepped up in moments they needed him. Like that at the end of game three, when they needed that steal on Bogdanovich and he goes the other way and makes the tough one over Sabonis, the way he stepped up in game two, like that to me is what you need from Kyrie, just being able to really be the guy in the moment. And I don't know if that what the point totals will be and whether they'll lean on him heavier in this round, but I feel like he's going to find his way to get his points no matter how clogged up it is near the basket.
So that's probably true because he's Kyrie Irving. He's one of the best pure scorers in the league. But if part of Milwaukee's strategy is to make it difficult for him and for him to rely on his other teammates, and if early on those guys aren't making shots, how do you think he's going to react?
Well, that's the fascinating question in the micro and the macro, right? Like, everything's sunshine and puppy dogs right now because they're winning, and Kyrie's been in a better mood, not only like in these playoffs, but really the last, I'd say, 2 weeks of the season. He just seemed to turn a corner and realize, like, you know, he can't be frustrated. It rubs off on the team. We heard Terry Rozier say it 100 times. And I think he really embraced just being a positive, good leader and pumping up his guys' tires and all that. It will be fascinating to see what happens the first time they lose a game, the first time that the other guys don't step up if the Bucks sort of do put a premium on taking him away. And can he, you know, not allow his mood to affect how they respond to that? And it goes back to the adversity thing. You know, every time this year the Celtics have hit adversity, they crumble. And that's why it was so refreshing in the first round of these playoffs to see them behind every second half of those games and down double digits a couple times, and they responded well. So they need more of that, and they're going to be even more mentally tough. But I go back to it, like, this is a different beast. Like, the Bucks, you cannot play the way you did against the Pacers and expect to be even competitive in that series. Everybody's got to go to another level. You need game four Gordon Hayward more often. You need Marcus Morris to be efficient. If everybody takes their game up a little bit, you've got a chance in this series. But there's really just that slim margin for error, and they sort of got to brace themselves because they are going to hit that adversity, and it might happen pretty early. How does Kyrie and how does the team as a whole respond to that?
Chris, before we let you go and you jump on the plane to head out to Milwaukee, you're using terms like steal this series and talking to us here. So, I don't know. It feels like you're a little bit nervous. Do you think the Celtics can do that and actually pull this off?
Yeah, so my prediction was Celtics in seven before the playoffs, and they're kind of figuring that this would be the matchup. And I haven't really hedged too much on that. I do think it's going to be tough for the Celtics to win a game seven in Milwaukee. But that being said, I do think they have, as much as Giannis is clear-cut number one in this series, I do think the Celtics have the better depth, that if they get guys like Hayward to play the way that we've seen glimpses of, they have a very good chance in this series. And yet, like, you know, it's hard for me to say, like, what team will show up and how will they respond. It's just there's not enough of a sample size, and I can't gauge too much off that first round because, again, the Pacers were a bit of a punching bag without a much of an offensive threat. So we'll know early. You know, but I think after game one, we'll sit here and whether we're confident in these predictions or not. But, yeah, I'll put my neck out there. I do think the Celtics find a way to steal one of these on the road, and if they take care of business at home, they can win this series in seven or six or whatever it has to be. But, man, they've got to really put a premium on taking away everybody else besides Giannis. It's one of those situations where he might go for 50 every night, and you just have to live with that. But, you know, can you live with Middleton? Can you live with Bledsoe? And, you know, we'll find out pretty quickly.
All right, Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston, on his way out to Milwaukee. Safe travels. Enjoy.
5 inches of snow. 5 inches of snow coming to Milwaukee.
Wait, what? Really?
Yeah, 5 to 7 inches.
Oh, God. Oh, that's horrible. Oh, you poor bastard. Oh, well, gee, I hope your flight's not delayed. Good luck with that, and hopefully we'll talk to you next weekend.
Make sure they shoveled out the bronze fawns.
Take care, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
Chris comes to us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's horrible. The hell is it? April 27th, they're getting 5 inches of snow in Milwaukee? Oh, God. Ugh. Just terrible. I feel for anyone going out there, whether they're covering it or if you're a Celtics
really?
Fan. Oh, that's
worst.
That's
not what you were telling me in the break. You were saying you hope you guys did a Felger-Maz remote for this series.
Nope. No, I absolutely did not say that, you a-hole. That is the last thing I want. I do not want to travel for this series.
Yeah, you guys could stay with Felger's family out there.
Now, if the Bruins make the finals and say it's against, say, like St. Louis or maybe the Avalanche, I'd be more than happy to go. But the Celtics for the Milwaukee.
Ugh, sure.
Please.
Come
one
on.
Of the hell holes in America.
Sports Hub Celtics Show live from Milwaukee.
Now, shut up. Sports Hub Celtics Show is going to pause here. We'll get Tim McCone to get you caught up in the latest in the NFL draft. And we want to hear from you. Your thoughts on this upcoming series. Celtics, Bucks, tips off tomorrow, 617-779-0985.
Take us with you on your phone with the TuneIn app.
That's too easy right there.
It's the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 Sports Hub.
The Giannis recipe, what to do, is not complicated to understand. As Kenny Smith put it so very well on TNT, it's a version of the kind of stuff we've been saying for the last couple of years. 15, 18 feet from the basket beyond, he's Clark Kent. Once he gets inside the free throw line, he's Superman, and you can't stop him. So it's going to be multiple guys, and where does he get the ball? And can you stop him from, I've never seen anybody get to the rim. He gets to the rim in one stride from the free throw line. That's why he said, since they've been keeping track of dunks, he had more this year than anybody's ever had. So he's just a dominant force. And again, one of the reasons why they are not the team they were last year between Giannis and the guy that, to me, as an athlete, when you lose, people move on. You forget last year's series, right? You know who didn't forget last year's series and has been living with it for a year? Eric Bledsoe has. And he is, it's funny because he doesn't have the same matchup with Rozier. Obviously, he's got to deal with Kyrie. But this moment, this series has been driving Eric Bledsoe, the specter of getting a second chance against Boston for a year. He was great in the first round against Detroit. And he right now, to me, is the wild card in the series.
So that's Sean Grandy, the voice of the Celtics here on 98.5 of Sports Hub. He and Cedric Maxwell have a call at Game 1. Celtics-Bucks tomorrow with tip-off at 1 o'clock here on 98.5 of Sports Hub. That was him with Zolak and Bertrand. just yesterday, I believe, or a couple of, within the last couple of days, talking about this series and what Eric Bledsoe could mean to the Bucks. So just quickly before we get to some of the calls and your thoughts at 617-779-0985, we talked about Bledsoe earlier, but is that one of the things that maybe the Celtics are underestimating about Milwaukee, is Eric Bledsoe in this series? Because if you look at just the numbers alone, he hasn't been good against them even this year, averaging just over 11 points a game, 11.3 per game, shooting 12 for 27. They got into his head in this series last year, at least Terry Rozier did, and Rozier was great here, bad on the road, but overall, is this one of the things that they're just like, do you think the Celtics collectively, because I know fans are, they're like, Bledsoe, bleh. I know I'm doing it too, like, yeah, he's a bum, but is that a problem potentially?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't underestimate the guy, and again, you have to remember, in general, the general rule of the NBA is that supporting cast members, role players, are more likely to play better at home than they are on the road. And so in that series last year, I didn't think Bledsoe played well really anywhere. However, this year, I think he'll play better. And four of the games out of the seven, because I think it will go seven, will be at home. So I think you're going to get a better version of him because of that. And you might get lesser versions of some of your guys. You know, for example, and I know it's different. It's really hard. I mean, it's an apples to oranges comparison between the teams and the series from last year to this year because of improvement with Milwaukee. And because obviously no Kyrie Irving, no Gordon Hayward last year for the Celtics. But, you know, Jaylen Brown was really, really good in that series last year against the Bucks. I mean, he shot 46% from the field. Are you going to get that this time around? You might not. Jason Tatum was pretty good. He's been great in the playoffs. It seems like he just elevates his game. But, you know, how good is he going to be in this series? Will he be as good as he was last year? So,
or even how he was in the Pacers series.
Yeah.
It did mirror how he played in the postseason last year. That was encouraging.
Absolutely. And so I think we're all just sort of assuming, like, the guys who played really well for the Celtics last year, it's kind of the same assumptions we made at the start of the season with the Celtics team that ended up winning 49 games. The guys who played really well in the playoffs last year, they're just going to play at the exact same level, and you're just going to add Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, and they're going to play like Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, and then there you go. You know, you're going to, everybody else is going to be overmatched.
McBone, how are you feeling about this series? I know you were kind of down on this Celtics team, especially towards the end of the year like I was. Have you kind of changed after what happened against the Pacers?
No, the Pacers didn't change my mind whatsoever. That's something that should have happened. This is the series I think you're going to find out what the deal is. And I don't have high expectations for the Celtics in this series, no.
So Bucks in what, five?
Probably like six, something like that. I think there's still a ton of talent on this team, but I think throughout the season you've seen that the individual talent, the sum of the parts, doesn't equal what you'd expect for Boston. I think that's going to play out in this series.
And that's the thing too. So when I, you know, to open the show today, I said that someone's going to get exposed as a fraud here with the Celtics. Like, they go down 0-2 in this series, then all the good feelings, fraudulent. It was all fake. Oh, they're back. They've found themselves. They're down 0-2. I think the checkout factor is going to be real with Kyrie, especially if he has one foot out the door for New York. I really believe that. When the Bucks, the other hand, I don't know. Like, I've seen it with these Mike Budenholzer teams. Like, oh, man, the Hawks, they're really going to challenge this year. And they get to the second round and they get squashed again by LeBron and the Cavs.
Do you think there's an element to, because you have covered Budenholzer teams and he has had really successful regular seasons, do you think there's an element of, A, his system is just sort of, he's like a regular season coach, or like the way his teams are, kind of like the Bridgie Celtics? I mean, they were a team that was built to win more in the regular season, whereas when they had to face one opponent, you know, seven straight times, some of the weaknesses got exposed. So that's A for me with Budenholzer. And B, is he a victim of his own success? In other words, he gets the most out of these teams, more really than he should out of the talent in the regular season. And then his teams get to the playoffs, the expectations are so high. But like I just said, the talent level sort of, you know, wins out in the playoffs in the NBA.
Oh, I think it's the latter. It's definitely, it's because he's a damn good coach coming from that Popovich system and everything in the pace and space. And obviously that has helped Giannis tremendously. It's why he's the MVP this year. It's just all the other parts. They're parts, you know, like the expectations get a little too high because of how it looks in the regular season. And I think he could fall victim to that again, despite the fact he has the best player in the league right now. Dean in Shrewsbury, your thoughts on this series. Hello, Dean.
Hi, I think Kyrie needs to be a lot better than he was in the Indiana series. Now, he did play great in the last 5 minutes of games, but he shot only 52.2 true shooting percentage during the playoffs, which is three under league average for the season. And other than that, I think it was game two when he went off for 37 points. He was just abysmal offensively. He was good defensively, but we need him to be a good offensive player.
I don't know. Is Kyrie even a really concern for you in this series?
A little bit. Yeah. Because I mean, it wasn't easy for him during the regular season against the Bucks. I mean, they did a pretty good job of making it challenging for him. And I think of that game, was it in February in Milwaukee that they lost when he had the last shot? And you know, was he unable to get that to go? I mean, you're talking about a guy, again, I mean, he shot 38% from the field against those guys this year. That's not Kyrie Irving, and they're going to need more than that, definitely, to be able to win this series. So, you know, I do have a little bit of concern about him in this series. My concern is more like him getting frustrated if what's happening out there is he's making the right play, right? And it becomes obvious that he's making the right play and giving it to guys, and those guys aren't converting the opportunities. You know, how does he respond to that? Where it's like, okay, the Bucks are taking something away from me. They're forcing me to go through four or five guys to get to the rim, and I'm drawing all this attention, and I'm kicking it for wide open threes, and we're not knocking him down.
Yeah, the on the court stuff I don't really worry about. His game is, you know, he's been a joy to watch, and I'm not worried about that. It's all the other stuff. It's the intangibles, the bitchiness, him maybe checking out. That kind of stuff is a concern. But in terms of on the court, no. Guys like Morris, who have been a black hole in terms of the offense, and who helped shoot terrible teams like the Pacers back into it time and again. It's guys like that, some of the other role players. What are they going to get out of Gordon Hayward? Those are my concerns.
Yeah, we haven't really talked much about him. I guess with Kyrie, and you know how much I love Kyrie as a player. I just think it's a unique situation in this series. Excuse me. And do you get to a point where he sort of goes full Russell Westbrook, where it's just like, you guys can't do it, bombs away, it's just about me? Because the strength of the Celtics in the series and their advantage is that they have more depth than the Bucks. They have more scorers than the Bucks. And if they can't get all those guys to click or get all those guys involved, then you're just seeding what your true advantage is. And if it gets to a point where he's like, you know, through two games or three games, Jaylen Brown's not knocking down those open threes that he's setting up, and he just does the full Westbrook and says, this is it, I'm just going to do my thing, then I think the Celtics are an easier team to defend and an easier team to beat.
We'll touch on Gordon Hayward here in the final segment coming up. Also want to get more of your calls, but we would be remiss as the Sports Hub Celtics show if we didn't touch on the passing of John Havlicek on Thursday. We'll get to that coming up in our long commercial-free segment next here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics show.
This is Kyrie Irving on the home of the Boston Celtics, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He really was what everybody says. I mean, he was just a great, humble, compassionate player and person and father and husband and all that. And as great a player as he was, I mean, that's what stands out when I think of John Havlicek. And here was a guy that I truly admired as a player growing up.
Oh, his name rings bells. You know, we know who he is. We know what he's done for his organization. He's one of those legends that you aspire to be, so being a Boston Celtic. Truly sorry to hear that he passed away yesterday.
As good as he was as a basketball player, and as good as the highlights are, and as good as everybody says he was live, just a better guy. Like, just, you could just humble. Never, you would have never known he was a Hall of Famer and an all-time Celtic. He was just a proud granddad and dad and husband, and just a really good human being.
So that is Danny Ainge, Jaylen Brown, and Brad Stevens all talking about John Havlicek, Celtics legend, who passed away on Thursday at age 79. Sports Hub Celtics show, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Personally, I'm too young to have ever seen him play, but I think it goes without saying, from age 8 to 80, you knew his name. Like Jaylen Brown said, the name rings out, and if you just know a little bit about Celtics history, or you've ever heard, you know, your dad or your granddad talk about Hondo, like the guy was ridiculous. Just look up some of the stats. Averaged 20.8 points for his career, played more games for the Celtics than Bill Russell, scored more points anybody in Celtics history, more assists than any other Celtic except for Bob Cousy. Russell considered him the best all-around player he ever saw, and that's Bill Russell talking about, you know, this is Bill Russell we're talking about here. So, I mean, the guy's a legend for a reason, and the outpouring of sadness and hearing about his passing on Thursday was obviously warranted. So, I mean, you two, we're on the same age, Chris. You were obviously too young to see him play, but
yeah.
obviously, this was one of the great Celtics legends and deserving of all this outpouring as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, probably I would say, and again, I didn't see him play. I've heard stories from Bob Ryan, and you just read some of the stuff and the other people. Probably one of the most underappreciated players in NBA history. Certainly appreciated here in Celtics history, but just overall sort of NBA history. And when you look at John Havlicek, his career, obviously the steal against the 76ers. We all know that iconic call from Johnny Mose. But he really was sort of like the bridge, you know, between the Bob Cousy, Bill Russell Celtics. And he didn't play with Larry Bird, but he, you know, retired. He basically, at the end of that year, they end up drafting Bird, and Bird shows up the next year. Red Auerbach uses the whole junior eligible, you know, ruse to basically steal Larry Bird. But John Havlicek is one of the main reasons that the Celtics are looked at as one of the preeminent dynasties in sports. He's an 8-time NBA champion. He was part of that whole run, obviously, with Russell, but then won championships in the 70s where he was the guy, where he was the guy that the team revolved around. And they would have, I know, I've talking to Bob Ryan too, one of the things that he's mentioned in the past, you know, 1973, I think there's a lot of Celtics fans that rue that season. They could have won another championship, but Havlicek separated his shoulder, but he was like still out there playing, which is amazing. And I read another thing the other day. We were just talking about Malcolm Brogdon and plantar fasciitis. You know, in 1976 when they won, and obviously the triple overtime game and all that stuff, do you know that Havlicek was playing in the playoffs with plantar fasciitis?
No, I had no
idea. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Like, Brogdon's like out, and I'm not ripping Malcolm Brogdon. That's why I think most normal human beings, NBA players, would not play. John Havlicek was playing and leading the Celtics to a championship.
Well, the other thing I didn't know either until, you know, we were talking about since he passed on Thursday, that he was drafted by the Cleveland Browns, right?
Yeah.
Like as a wide receiver, is that what it was?
Yeah, even though he didn't play football at Ohio State, he was on the baseball team as well, like phenomenal athlete. Just reading, again, this is all stuff that I've read. I'm not going to pretend that this is just, you know, oh, I know this about John Havlicek. I've learned more about John Havlicek since his passing, but it seemed like the Celtics were sort of nervous about him showing up because, you know, he Ohio kid, drafted by the Browns, could have played for the Browns, and I guess the Browns cut him. He was one of their last cuts as like a wide receiver, and then he showed up with the Celtics, and it was like, yeah, I'm going to play with you guys now.
So you'll see the black band that'll be on the Celtics jersey starting tomorrow in game one that'll have his number 17 on it that they'll be wearing throughout the playoffs. And then for game three, if you get there early too, I know that as part of the shoot-around, they're going to have special shirts commemorating John Havlicek for game three. When is that? Wednesday? It's going to be back at the Garden. So, obviously, I had to touch on that. And I want to hear from you on this upcoming series. And quickly on Gordon Hayward, the expectations for him, considering what we saw down the stretch and in this Pacers series. Are we going to get more of that, do you think? Or will he wilt? Which, because I've bought the cheese time and again on Gordon Hayward throughout the season. He's back, and then all of a sudden, you know, one little slip or he tweaks a little bit something, and I think mentally he goes the other way because of the, you know, coming back from the catastrophic ankle injury from last year.
Before I get to that, just one more thing on John Havlicek. I think it's interesting when you think about him. Like, I think John Havlicek, I think he's sort of like Mr. Celtic, you know? When I think about him, I think Mr. Celtic. On Hayward, interesting series for Hayward because I think he's really turned himself around getting to the rim, getting to the free throw line. But he still sort of does the, you know, lean back when he gets into the lane. And I think that's something he might even be doing subconsciously. He just doesn't have the same explosion. And so when I look at this series, I think it could be challenging for him to finish at the rim. But that could work in the Celtics' favor because I think this is a series where they need guys to knock down threes. Those are the shots that Budenholzer's team, the Bucks, that's what they're going to give up. And Gordon Hayward's an excellent shooter. And one of the things that's been puzzling about him this year is that, like, after a year off, you would think the easiest thing to do would be to come back and knock down, you know, standstill three-point jump shots and spot up three-point jump shots. And he's struggled a little bit with that. So I think they need him to make outside shots in this series.
I want to go to Charlie in Arlington. You're here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Hello, Charlie.
Yeah, so growing up, playing hoop in the backyard with my friends, we were either Cowens, JoJo, or Havlicek, and so it just a lot of great memories with him. Hey, so one of the things I wanted to ask you guys, and I know, and I don't know if it's been mentioned, but if the Celtics, and it's a big if, of course, do win the championship, let's say, what do you think the team's approach will be relative to Anthony Davis, assuming Kyrie stays, of course, but. I was curious what you thought about that.
Thanks, Charlie. I tend to think that if they were to go, you know, even if they had a real competitive finals, they say push Golden State or maybe even hell, Portland or Houston to 6-7 games, I think you have a better chance of convincing Kyrie Irving to stay. I'd like to think, and maybe even bringing in. I don't know, but the Anthony Davis thing, I've almost kind of given up on at this point, Chris, because it feels like it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to the Lakers, or it ain't going to be here.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I think a lot of it depends on where you're at with Kyrie and where Anthony Davis is at. Look, now David Griffin, maybe it's just posturing to try and get more out of the deal, is saying he's going to try and convince Anthony Davis to stay. I will say this. I think pulling off this deal in a manner where you're able to get Anthony Davis without a long-term commitment from him and just roll the dice, and it's not really hurting you in terms of who you're giving up, say like Tatum, got a lot harder when David Griffin walked through the door in New Orleans. And that's ultimately the calculus, I think, for Danny Ainge. If you don't have a commitment from Anthony Davis to stay beyond 1 year and you have to give up Jason Tatum, are you making that deal?
I don't know.
Danny's a gambler, yeah, so I'm not going to pretend to know what he would do. But, you know, I think you and I look at it and sort of say, no way. I don't think Danny looks at it and says, no way.
Well, I don't know. For now, all I'm worried about is this series, I think, like most Celtics fans. So tip off tomorrow, game one at 1 o'clock. Celtics, Bucks, Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell, they'll have your call right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Let's move on, though, because the Patriots have made another pick as the NFL draft continues. And I got to double check here because the big board might have hit again. We have
Are
to
you
see
serious?
It. We got to see.
Oh, wow.
The Felger and Maz big board has already struck twice. So we're going to get to that right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Tim McCone. Then it's back with some coverage of the NFL draft as the Patriots continue to make picks here, getting ready for the 2019 season. Want to get your thoughts on this, too, and these first couple of picks that they made as well. Want to hear from you at 617-779-0985. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.